He gave me a bottle of power. Powerade. There's enough power in this room to change Alcoholics Anonymous. Or at least blow the roof off this church tonight. Did I say I'm Joe Huff and that I'm a recovered alcoholic?
No.
First promise, first page, first edition, first printing. You either believe it or you don't. Most people that say they're recovering aren't. First speaker I ever heard was from Texas, Jimmy Williams. He said, you can stay sick in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous as long as you want, and you'll have plenty of company. He said, or you can get well in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you'll have plenty of company. You just got to choose the company you want to hang with. I like movies. Matter of fact, when you live in Los Angeles for 10 years, sometimes you get a little confused between movies and AA meetings. It all kind of starts to blur, right? And I thought of two movies tonight. One for you older folks, The Godfather, Godfather 1. And there was a famous conference of mob bosses called Appalachia. The other one's a little more current with, I think, Robert De Niro and Billy Crystal. The title has a lot to do with Alcoholics Anonymous. It's called Analyze This. That joke can be perceived any way you like it. And they had a conference of mob bosses. And I was thinking, you know, that's kind of like what it's like here tonight. We have representatives from the Bronx. The Godfather, Sydney. The godmother, Loretta. She's the boss. He knows it. Most guys don't. We have representatives from Staten Island. New Jersey. And there's an interesting thing going on. Every one of you. Anybody here tonight not interested in the work in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous? Maybe you will be. You're welcome. You are welcome among people that do the work. But we're not always welcome among people that don't do the work. And they're not always welcome among us. It took us a long time in Santa Monica and a lot of ridicule. They've been doing it now at this home group in Santa Monica for 15 years. I got sober. In Texas, we give our sobriety date. It's about bragging. Or, if you don't have much time, it's about letting everybody feel sorry for you in the room. My sobriety date, I was given this gift, August 17th, 1982, and for that I am very grateful. And I express that gratitude through action. Because I've had times where, and I was not on hiatus for 5 years, let me tell you. There's drunks in India. I was just at spiritual boot camp because I'd worn myself out a little bit with self-indulgence in the fellowship and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, doing what you all told me to do to stay sober. But I found out something about that too. I found out, you know, sometimes speakers say, I don't have much to share tonight, and you go, oh, damn. We're in for it, right? Some speakers say, I'm not going to tell you much about my drunk log. And you go, holy shit. 55 minutes later, your old lady leans over to you and says, I think I want him to get sober more than his own family did, right? I got a lot to say. I'm bubbling over, you know? I've been saving it up. You know, people that do the work in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous make fun of people that don't do what's in the Big Book. But if anybody in the room's ever written inventory about those motherfuckers that don't have to do what's in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, you probably saw something. You're pissed at them because you have to and they don't. And some of them get better and better and better. And you're six. I made it 6 months in the grace of God, and in Los Angeles, California, where I moved a few years later, one of the big slogans in South Central was, "The grace of God is sufficient." Not for me. A lady in our group once said, "Grace lasts only as long as ignorance, but when you see some truth, you need some power to do something with the truth you've seen." And I thought, damn. Some men in Alcoholics Anonymous, myself included, miss a whole facet of life from discounting women in Alcoholics Anonymous that you can learn about half of yourself. You know, don't tell one of these guys, where's my buddy? Where is he? Don't tell some of these guys from Brooklyn or Staten Island that within every being there's male and female. You think I had trouble getting in touch with my inner child? I didn't ever have no trouble getting in touch with my inner child. I've been desperately seeking for an inner adult. And when I've gotten a glimpse of him, I don't like him. I don't want to be an adult. But something happens when you get some power in your life. You know, lack of power aid is not my dilemma. There's a group in San Francisco of friends of ours who call themselves the Lapwads. Now, what the hell's a Lapwad? I said, what the hell's a Lapwad? They said, we call ourselves lack of power as a dilemma. I said, you all keep doing the work, you're going to have to change your name to Hopwads. She said, why? I said, because having power is a fucking dilemma too. Nelson Mandela wrote a very, very powerful poem when he was 26 years in a prison cell. And he said in that poem, I can't quote it, but he said, most people are more afraid of real power and light than they are of remaining irresponsible, powerless, and in the darkness. And you can stay sick as long as you want. Now, here's how powerful my ego is. And I don't want to fuck anybody up, but you can use the work to avoid doing the work. Let me say that again. You can use the work in the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous to avoid doing the work in the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. How does that look? 1 through 9.5. Telling people you've had a spiritual awakening as a result of the steps. You haven't had a spiritual awakening as a result of the steps. You've had an amazing spiritual awakening as a result of 1 through 9.5. And then you've rested on your laurels. And those laurels start to prick your ass, right? They go from comfort to pain. And then you even like that, because we're used to that too. That's just back to a normal condition. It was a little scarier when you were comfortable and with some power. And then you go, got to get in another workshop. They're doing another workshop, 1 through 9.75. Oh. 10, 11, and 12, have some fun, do something with some power, become effective. I've even seen people use 12 to avoid 9. You know, I might not be finishing amends, but I'm working with a lot of people. You know, why are you working with a lot of people? Because you're supposed to carry the message to stay sober. If you working with people can keep you sober, then there must be something you can do to keep yourself sober. And there must be a first step reservation. And it took some work to see that. I went to a guy one time, scary guy, he moved to L.A. from... I should back up just a second. I drank enough alcohol to need to do the work. What does the drama have to do with it? 10 treatment centers? We've all seen people go to treatment a lot more than 10 times who are not alcoholic. Grew up rich, grew up poor, abused, not abused, white, black, from Harlem, Bedford, wherever you're from. Doesn't matter. As long, and then you got this little if only story. If only I hadn't grown up in that family. We hear a lot about the yets, you know, and they talk about the yets in California. I haven't done that yet. But have you ever heard about the if onlys? If only my daddy hadn't been 60 when I was born. By the time I was 10, he was 70. That used to cause me great pain in therapy. Now that I've woken up a little bit, it gives me a tremendous amount of hope for at least the next 10 years of my life. I've been places where you have to have actually explain that joke. Because I'd like to be doing what my dad was doing when I'm 60 years old, right? Doesn't take a brain science to figure that out. Fortunately, I'm following in my father's footsteps. I've been a little out of shape for the last 3 years, but that's okay. That's another story. So what does it matter what kind of family I grew up in? You got this little if-only story. If only I hadn't gone to that school with those guys. If only they hadn't sent me to the East Coast. I got strong connections here in this area. The power's increasing. It's starting to glow. Stand away from the speaker. I got a big connection with this area. Ninth grade, they sent me from Battle Creek, Michigan. Didn't know what to do with me. Because I had a profound spiritual awakening. They thought the boys' behavior just changed. If you listen to a real alcoholic talk about his first drunk, and you listen to a real alcoholic talk about his last drunk, they're both spiritual awakenings. One wakes you up like you've never been woken up, and one wakes you up like you've never been woken up. What's the difference between the awakening that you had the first time alcohol worked? You listen to a real alcoholic get in touch with the first time it worked. Doesn't mean it's the first time you drank. The first time it worked, and every promise halfway through the ninth step came true. Not the 11th step promise. We have groups all around this country who think there's only 12 promises. They'll call them the 12 promises of Alcoholics Anonymous. Halfway through the ninth step, you'll be amazed. I'm sitting in the back. I'll never get those promises because I ain't never fucking making it through halfway through the ninth step. Halfway through the ninth step is going to mean going all around the country. I lived in a lot of places. The me that comes to one is not the me that gets to nine. A guy said to Mark Houston one time, because Mark talked about getting current. I wish there was a better word. I've been looking for a better word for a long time. Current. That place you used to dream about. If I could just start again. If I could just start over with some of these people, if we could just start from ground zero, that would be a big improvement. Mark was talking about getting current. There is a better word for it. Entering the world of the Spirit. And it ain't halfway through nine. It's on the other side of your first set of amends when you're current. Not that you haven't had an amazing spiritual awakening. Promises you that. Way before nine. After five, you've had some spiritual ideas. Now you've begun to have a spiritual awakening. Halfway through nine, some amazing promises. But then it says you enter the world of the Spirit. That day from when your head to your heart goes the realization, I don't know anybody. I got some that'll be ongoing, maybe the rest of my life, but I've gone to everybody I possibly could. You can't get yourself to that place from step one. So here I was, this kid, took a drink, age 12, woke up. I wasn't quiet, withdrawn, and silent anymore. I could say what I wanted. I could dance with the little girls across the room. Some power came into my life. And you listen to a real alcoholic talk about his first drunk when it first worked. And they're not just saying, oh, it sounded like it was going to be fun. I saw some people doing it. They're going to talk about connecting to something within themselves that they felt disconnected from once they look back on it. They're going to fit every description of untreated alcoholism on page 52 before they ever took a drink. Restless, irritable, discontent, didn't fit, felt like an alien from another planet, trouble with personal relationships, couldn't control my emotions. And anybody, if you're new here and you were damaged like I was from drugs and alcohol, and you're able to be here in the grace of God, thank God for every drop you ever drank. Don't hate the shit that brought you here. And I don't want to debate, but I believe this. Maybe God used alcohol and drugs to bring you back to Him. Who's brought more people to God than the devil? Virtue? Happiness? Money? No. Crack. I heard I heard this the other day. I thought it was funnier than hell. Now, I don't want to say anybody in this room is a crack addict, but a lot of you all look crackish. That's some funny shit. Crackish. Thank God for every drop I ever drank. And you know the ones that get to say that? We think we're the fortunate ones. God, we're the chosen ones to be in Alcoholics Anonymous. A lot of our friends got to get free. They paid their ticket. They got to go. We're still paying our ticket. We got to be right here suffering. Suffering. The still suffering. And sometimes you're suffering because you can't get still, and that's why you're still suffering. Because you can't get still. My sponsor always said, the goal is to get in touch with a quiet, still voice within, and you're never going to hear it if there's loud noises from the past. I know about being there. I took a drink, I had an awakening. They didn't know what to do with me. They sent me to the East Coast. Fortunately for me, unfortunately for everybody else, was one of the number one drug schools in the East Coast, outside of Worcester, Mass. Timothy Leary and Ram Dass, Richard Alpert, had one of their guys there making LSD using the school as a front. And I went from Boone's Farm apple wine, kid drinking, weekend kid drinking, loved it, to LSD 25 in a 4-month period at age 12. Wow. Real LSD. After 5 years of that, we called it L.S. Chicken. Yeah. He said, his brother said to me one night at his meeting in Dallas, I shared something. His brother looked at me, and his brother said, I'd like to have you sit right across. They sit in this big room reading a book to these people that are just on fire, him and this old boy, his brother and this old boy. And his brother said, I'd like to see you sitting right across from me because I want to look at you. And I shared something one night, and his brother said, I don't know what drugs you were doing in high school, but I wish I would have had some. I used to give his brother hell every week. Because we love each other. And how can people that do the work in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous be experiencing disunity? How can you continue doing the work and get further away from the people that brought you to it? How can you be gossiping about them and them gossiping about you and you're gossiping about them? That's why we've come together here tonight. We got the five heads of the five families of the New York Mafia together. Appalachia 2. Big book Appalachia 2. That should be the name of the conference. Right? Police raid this motherfucker, take a lot of us to jail. Just like in the movie. Right? You're under arrest for having too much power in your life. We don't like people. A lot of you know what they do with people in America that get free. They killed every one of our heroes, white or black. They kill people that get free. Same in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because there's a lot of people that want to kill you. They want you dead because they want to stay sick. They want to have plenty of company. And you're messing up their company. You're messing up their comfort. You're messing up the grace of God. But I'll tell you what I found out about my judgment of people that don't have to do the work. Not only was I pissed off that they don't have to, and I do, I was taken to a place where I love doing the work, and I saw that my judgments about people that don't have to was about my own agnosticism, because I believed God was working in my life, but I didn't believe God was working in Alcoholics Anonymous the way I thought He should. Because you know what? We're surrounded by people in Alcoholics Anonymous. God bless them. They don't have to do the work. Let them be. Be there for the guys that need to. And carry the message to everybody. It ain't about ragging on the fellowship. It's about love and service. It's about love and service. But I remember a man that was there in a room similar to this on a Friday night in 1982. And his name was Don Pritz. His name is Don Pritz. He didn't want to be there that night. He didn't go to that treatment center because those people might or might not have been alcoholic. He told me he went to that treatment center because he's alcoholic. That's why we be in service. Because we're alcoholic, not what they're doing. We should be in the places we disagree with their philosophy more than any other place on the planet. Sordid spots. I've been in sordid spots in Beverly Hills, much more sordid than my friend Sydney's place in the Bronx. Because sordid ain't how it looks. Sordid is whether there's any life there or not. There's meetings in South Central Los Angeles I love to speak at because they testify. And if they like you, you know it. And if they don't like you, you know it. And that's what I like about New Yorkers. Because with New Yorkers, it's either fuck you or I love you. There ain't nothing in between. Los Angeles is like, yeah, you're cool. Guy said to me tonight, he said, you're not from L.A. I never fit there. And I was just thinking about it the other day. My best friends in Los Angeles are all from New York. Jaime and Shelley, God bless them, got sober under the Brighton Beach boardwalk. Couldn't find the message. Given the grace of God, they made it for a year. They'd start going to meetings, Houston and Varick, and then we're talking 15 years ago. They'd hear shit like one step a year. Imagine 12 years before you could be in the 12th step. When do you get to carry the message? When you're 12? I wish Bill would have believed that. We wouldn't be here. Bob would have been fucked, right? Let me get back to you, Bob. I'll get back to you in about 11 years. I got to stay in New York for 11 years. I'll be out there when I'm 12. Right? Didn't even have a book. Ain't about the book. Ain't about the book. I've worshipped the book. I heard in Denver when I got sober, read the book, go to meetings, work the steps, get a sponsor. My mind said, then those are the things that will keep me sober. But you know what I failed to realize? I already was. 6 months later, I'd seen people knew the book better, worked the steps, had better sponsors, spent more time with them, knew the book inside out, went to 10 times more meetings than me, drink again. Hit bottom with the second half of step one. Heard a lady use a phrase the other day. I can't take the credit. I haven't said it more than 3 times. I just heard it the other day. A sister from L.A. who's in Dallas got sober in our group in Santa Monica. She said, you know what happened? I got stuck on the dash. Ooh. And you can get stuck on the dash going forward, but you can get stuck on the dash going backwards. I'll tell you what that means. Ask the guy tonight at dinner. Fellow brother, Mad Dog. I know he's a Mad Dog. He's forgotten. I said to him, where are you at? He said, I got some amends left. But my life's great. I said, those amends have anything to do with you drinking again? Nope. He's stuck on the dash going backwards because it was about the unmanageability of his life. He got through 9.5. His life got better. And it stopped because it wasn't about being powerless over alcohol anymore. Anybody in amends right now for the first time, 7th time, 4th time, 3rd time, I'm going to give you a prayer. It's going to fuck your head up. Here's the prayer. Close your ears if you don't want to hear it, because once you hear it, it's going to fuck you up whether you say the prayer or not. Here's the prayer. Dear God, please show me if these unfinished amends have anything to do with whether I drink again or not. Amen. Because you know what happens? The further away you get from one, the further away you get from one. And you know, I actually have a mind that says this. Step one's only true when you're in it. You know, when you're going with a sponsor from the title page, 3 parts of the program, you know, doctor's opinion, Bill's story, there's a solution, more about alcoholism, the first step's true. But now you've done some work. And now you don't really have a drinking problem anymore. You have living problems that amends are going to straighten out. And amends straighten them out. And everything on 52 starts to change. And you're doing 10 and 11 out of virtue. There ain't no desperation anymore. If I do it in the morning, I do it. If I don't, I don't. Because they told me in my home group, don't beat yourself up. Well, I'll tell you what. If you're not beating yourself up, alcohol will beat you the fuck up. Right? Excuse my language. I just have to see my friend Sydney, and something happens. Because this ain't a room full of people who had a crack in the pool today or a flat tire on the way getting here. Most of the people in this room, even if you're still debating, it's probably about life and death. And I like to be in rooms with people where it's about life and death. But sometimes people like me that think it was about life and death, it's not about life and death anymore. It's about life and life, a great life. And what happens when you get free of the fear of dying? I wasn't afraid when you told me when I was new. To drink again is to die. You know why I'm not afraid of that? I've been out on the streets. I grew up halfway between Detroit and Chicago. I've been in the penitentiary. For me to drink is to die might be a hopeful promise of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know what scared me though? You might go on living a long time feeling the way you're feeling this long sober, dying an alcoholic death. Because an alcoholic death usually takes a long time. And I've had to be reminded of that from time to time. And what do you need to be reminded of that? You need to be around people that care more about whether you live or die than your sensitive alcoholic feelings and how what they might say might make you feel. There's some stuff you got to quit caring about, but there's some stuff you got to start caring about. You got to quit caring about what anybody thinks about what you have to say. And you think that was easy speaking around the country when I thought I was a controversial big-time speaker? Because you know what? I still thought I could help alcoholics. And you know what? I don't look for people I can help anymore. Because you know what you end up with when you look for people you can help? You end up with people that a human power can help. You know who I look for? People that nobody can help, and I point into that which can. Because when I went to Don and I said, I thought you told me reading the book, working the steps, getting a sponsor, and going to meetings is what would keep me sober, he said, no. We hoped all those things would get you in touch with something that already is keeping you sober. That's what I forget. I'm not going to talk that you're passing the basket. She comes from the right church, though. You pass the basket at the right time. Before they get pissed off. Because the next speaker is not as nice as I am. I'm a nice guy. So you're 15 years sober. You're in Santa Monica, California. You've been 5 years in Denver. A lot of work with some great people. My heroes are still in Denver. Why it's in Denver, I don't know. We probably all feel about that way where we got sober. But there are some giants in Alcoholics Anonymous around this country. I was 5 years in Denver, moved to L.A. I was there 10 years. So right around 12 or 13, I've been there 8 or 9 years. A guy moves from L.A. from Denver to Los Angeles. And of course, he's the guy that I have to go through the work. He's the only one that can take Joe Hawk through the work. Man, that's fucked up, isn't it? I run down there. He says, I remember you from our group in Denver. You've been on some of our retreats. He said, you want to do the work? I said, yeah. He said, why? I ask everybody I work with that question. Is this work what you want to do? Are you willing to go to any length? Why do you want to do the work? And why the fuck with me? Because by the time they leave my house, that's what I'm asking myself. Why me? Right? Because I don't get healthy, well-adjusted people in Alcoholics Anonymous. You're looking for healthy, well-adjusted people in Alcoholics Anonymous? Give up. Even in a recovered state, we're some fucked up people, man. We don't fit out there in the normal world. What do you mean you had to do this, this, and this to get some power in your life? I just walked into church, heard a great sermon, realized when I do this, this, and this, this happens. I started doing it in my life, and I just quit doing it. What's wrong with you? I don't know. Lack of power, right? Then you get some power, and you're still not like other people. But you got to live out there in the world. In it, but not of it. Because we get to live from another place. We get to live as members of the Fellowship of the Spirit, not just members who have experienced the Spirit of the Fellowship. That's why they call that. The big book talks about two fellowships. And isn't it interesting? One at the beginning of the work. Some of us walked into our first meeting. Some of us had a major awakening just saying, my name's Joe and I'm an alcoholic. That can be an amazing experience. Feeling people that share in a common problem. And then they tell you stuff to build up your ego. Right away they build up your ego. Maybe we need that when we're new. We need some ease and comfort. And they start off by telling you, you're the most important person in the room. You go, well, finally I'm in a room where they realize my importance. But imagine if the room was just filled with newcomers who share in a common problem. The county jail would have worked for every one of us the first time we went. If all you need is a room full of people who share in a common problem, okay, newcomers might be the blood of Alcoholics Anonymous. But you know, blood needs a heart to run through, and that's the people that shared with us who didn't want to be there on a Friday night, who didn't want to be in that treatment center, who didn't agree with their philosophy, who didn't care who was alcoholic or who wasn't, or who was doing the work and who wasn't. He was there to save his own ass because he was alcoholic. And if you think I'm still doing this out of virtue or some great enlightenment from India or that I transgressed alcoholism, you're mistaken. Suffering never ends, but freedom doesn't either, and they're always both right there. It's just layer after layer after layer. And you can focus on the suffering, or you can focus on the spirit of the universe that is there every single moment. It ain't going nowhere. And that's a dilemma. That ain't always frolicking off to God with your sponsor down the rosy red path. The spiritual path can be lonely in Alcoholics Anonymous. Try to find as many people as you can in this area that have gotten current with every amends they're consciously aware of. Don't ask them, have they been through the steps? A lot of people will tell you, I've been meeting some recently. How many times have you been through the steps? Three? Really? Cool. Let's hang out. Have another conversation. You still got some amends from your first time through? Yep. You still got some amends from your second time through? Yep. Then why are you telling people you've been through the steps three times when all you've done, you've never completed eight or nine? Would you tell people you've been through the steps if you didn't finish four? Would you tell people you've been through the steps if you hadn't finished your fifth step? No. Then why do you tell people you've been through the steps when you haven't finished the last word in eight or nine? But you've had a major awakening. You've had a major awakening. Your life has taken off. Everything from page 52 has changed. But you got lost going backwards on the dash because the amends don't have shit all to do with alcohol and drugs anymore. So you just say, Dear God, please show me if these unfinished amends have anything to do with whether I drink again or not. And you might get reminded that 9 is connected to the first half of step 1. And your reason to do 10 and 11 ain't about virtue or because you've become a wonderful saint. It's because you're powerless over alcohol and drugs. With a manageable life, with power in your life, with responsibility, don't you wish sometimes when you're alone after a meeting sometimes and you've done a lot of work in AA that you could go back to being ignorant and not knowing some of that shit? You know, just kind of glide through AA with the grace of God. Today I have a choice. I don't know what you big book Nazis. Imagine what would be in somebody's heart. Imagine what would have to be in some, a lot of you in this room know what I mean. Imagine what would have to be in somebody's heart to use the word Nazi about another member of the program that you're in that saved them too, maybe. Or maybe they're just a type 1. Big Book describes 4 types. Had a major awakening at his brother's group this year reading the chapter to the wise. Why do I need to read the chapter to the wise? I've never had one. That's like thinking you've been through the steps a few times. You don't need to read the chapter to the agnostic again, because how could you have current agnosticism? You were agnostic once, and it ain't never going to happen again, because you chose God as everything. But see, the fucked up thing about choosing God as everything, you're the one going to the well with the container. Your conception of everything this time. Is your conception of everything this time the conception you had 19 years ago? Are you operating in the world of the Spirit from an inventory from 20 years ago? I can barely operate in the world today from an inventory from 2 years ago, doing 10 and 11, studying with the Dalai Lama, with a great teacher, in a place where there was nothing but time. I submit myself to a person that I respect, who's had a spiritual awakening, deeper and deeper and deeper, who's a mad dog. He's a type 4 that needs to do type 4 work. Type 4 people can't get by on type 2 work. I go to a man who's a type 4, but he does type 4 work. He's been on the other side of amends many times. And I know I'm not going to him, and he knows I'm not coming to him. And we know we're not going to a process either, because we've gotten free of worshiping the person we go to. That's what that's cool about that. We get free of worshiping the person we go to, and we get free of the process that we used to worship too, because it's about going to a deeper relationship with God. He gave me some questions. I've been in a set-aside prayer longer this time, and the first three steps, than any time I've ever been through the work in 20 years, and saw, you don't have to be fucked up. And got free of a major pattern that I want to talk about for a minute. Because for 15 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, I suffered from a belief that goes like this. If it feels good, it's good. And if it feels bad, it's bad. So anything that makes me feel bad, it could actually possibly be the devil, as a matter of fact. Anything that makes me feel bad, I'm going to stay away from, and became so good at 10 and 11 that I was just going around stuff rather than through it, because I have a mind that says you cannot be in pain, fear, resentment, depression, emotional pain, physical pain, and at peace at the same time. So, if you're in pain, you got to do whatever you need to do to get back to comfort. And a man took 30 of us on a retreat. A scary guy. This guy said, I've been coming to this group for 6 years. I know what you bastards want. You want me to do all the work this weekend, and I'm not gonna. Gave a 1-hour talk on worshiping comfort, thinking that it's God. Sent us back to our rooms to write an assignment. How many of my attitudes, beliefs, and actions have to do with the idea that if it feels good, it's good, and if it feels bad, it's bad? I went back to my room, I wrote some stuff, read it to him the next day. He looked at me, he said, Hawk, I've known you for 13 years. You've been a part of my group, you've been on some of our retreats, you've been out here, you've been working with others. I got one question for you. I said, what? He said, what are you getting ready for? I said, what? He said, everything you read to me was about, well, maybe when I'm, or maybe when I have this much, or maybe after this next relationship, or maybe after the next retreat, then I'll, he said, what are you getting ready for? And some whole stuff broke open in my life. I believe in having spiritual teachers. You know why? It might not be true in this area. Like I said, I don't want to say anybody in this room is a crack addict. You might look crackish. And I don't want to say anybody in this room is a real alcoholic. But a lot of you look to be alcoholic. And you know what? It is really hard to find out about growing spiritually in Alcoholics Anonymous. I hate to say it. You know why? Because those that are free will tell you to go have your own experience and be taken where your heart takes you. They won't do it for you because they're free. They're not going to say, pick this teacher and this book and this tradition. They're going to say, your heart will guide you. And those that aren't free are going to say, meditation is about listening, prayer is about talking. It's about as far as it's going to go. And I no longer see the spiritual life inside of AA separate from the spiritual life outside of AA, because all I got anymore is a life. That's like a couple. I don't want to rag on any married couples. And I believe it's good to have whatever group you want to go to. But imagine this. The person in your life you say you love the most. You've made a commitment to spend the rest of your life together, but you keep your programs separate. Now, ain't that fucked up? With the most important person in your life, you're going to keep the most important thing in your life and the most important relationship you both have in your life separate. You bring God into your marriage or it ain't got no hope. You bring your you know what I would love to have one day, and I've seen it in our group in Santa Monica? I would love to have a mate that I would ask if we could go through the work together. People have done it. Imagine reading inventory to your wife. Can't do that! Now let me get that straight. The most important person in my life that I want to spend the rest of my life with and share the spiritual journey with the most important relationship we both have, which is with God, we're not going to share it. Because I can't read that stuff to her. That's why you keep fucking her over and you keep having to make amends, because you're keeping that stuff from her. And you know what? Sometimes you got to get honest with people that are close in your life before you make amends and let the chips fall. I've had to do it. Not with distant people, not with vague relationships. I've had to go to some of the closest people in my life and say, I've lied to you about this. I've lied to you about this. I didn't tell you about this. I'll be back when you're ready to see me to make amends, because that's the truth. There it is. That ain't easy. You're going to hide behind amends and say, well, my sponsor told me I can't tell you this. My sponsor told me I can't tell the most important person in my life this. My home group told me I can't tell her this. Imagine a sponsor editing your amends list. Every amends your sponsor has told you not to make is another piece of freedom they're taking you away from to help you stay sick and dependent and stuck on them, because they love collecting babies. That's what they call them in California. I never did. I got friends. Who gets help more, the sponsor or the sponsee? Anybody that's worked with people, answer that. If you haven't worked with people, or you're coming to this thing this weekend, and you're expecting Mark and I to do the same thing from 15 years ago, you're in big fucking trouble. Because we don't care anymore. We care about whether you live or die, but not about being popular. We weren't popular when we were trying to be popular. Welcome. You want to get free? How free do you want to be? My sponsor told me I can't go back to the 5 major female relationships in my life. He might as well have given you a razor blade, because they're probably the 5 most important amends that you owe. I heard a thing the other night. A guy said, I never make amends without going to my sponsor first. Don Pritz, he told me to pray first, and if I was confused, then maybe we would talk. But he always pointed me to God. That's all we are. That's all we can be. Pointers. That's all we are. Pointers. They call you, go to God. They call you, it ain't going to come from me. I can't manage my own life. I need God. Go to God. Call God. Pray. Pray about it. Shut up. Right? Mark does some shit where he'll put a motherfucker on a timer. Right? Hello? Yes, you got 2.5 minutes. Ready? Go. Time's up. Mike Lawrence is an obsessive compulsive alcoholic. Anybody ever had an email from Mike Lawrence? He was emailing people in Buffalo, Philadelphia, Baltimore, would be just to our house. I know he's alcoholic. I know he's alcoholic. He's a mad dog.
Maybe next time you'll reply to one.
Don't reply. It's a devil machine. I got to see you face to face. I'm not sitting in front of one of those things. Click. That's all I can do. Turn it on, turn it off. Delete. Thank you. I put things like this. Give me a call, or I'd like to see you. Oh, that leads me to what I really wanted to talk about. Everyone in this room should write a letter to GSO, General Service Conference, or an email at least. Because you know what? They really made a big mistake. And they made a big mistake for the first time since they were able to change the book since 1976. They made a big mistake that some people haven't noticed yet on the paper cover. You know why? Because we get the paper cover, we crumble it up, throw it away, because we're more ashamed of being sober than we were of being drunk. And anybody that breaks your anonymity has made you feel shame, because you're more ashamed of being sober than you were ashamed of being drunk. Anonymity, you know what Dr. Bob said? It's as harmful not to use your last name here in the fellowship as it is to use your name out in the public at the level of press, radio, and TV. But you know what they did on the paper cover? You know how it used to say, and I didn't see it for a long time, it used to say in one of those paragraphs, the first 164 pages is the AA message. Man, that would help a lot of people that want to debate what's the message. You go to a service conference, they're talking about trinkets, posters, badges, this. You ask one question. What was Bill Wilson's definition of service? Anything that makes carrying the message possible. And you ask one simple question, the whole room will go into an uproar. What's the message? Whoa! Just don't drink no matter what? No. It told us right on the paper cover until 2 years ago, whenever the fourth edition came out. It said, page 1 through 164 is the AA message. You know what it says now in the fourth edition? Page 1 through 164 had been the basis for many of you poor alcoholics. They didn't say poor alcoholics, but they say it had been the basis for many alcoholics. And the way the attitude, the way it sounds is, they might as well have said, those poor ones that have to do what's in this book. So they don't even say 1 through 164 is the message anymore. Then they said another fucked up thing in the foreword of the fourth edition. Modem to modem, face to face, a meeting online is the same as your home group here tonight. Let me tell you this. I'm going to go online and say, hi, my name's Susie. I'm 19 years old. I need a meeting. Anybody want to help me? What am I going to say? My name's Joe. I'm 20 years sober. I'm a fat old guy. Smoke cigarettes. And I need some attention because I'm 20 years sober and I'm dying of untreated alcoholism because I can't get myself to a meeting. Fuck that. They should have said, it could help you get in touch with us. It might be helpful if you're out of the country. It might be helpful if you're a loner or an internationalist. But I'm telling you, I can sit in this room and I don't know a lot of you. It's nice to have some friends here tonight. It's nice to have a couple guys at my side that I know if anybody rushes the stage, I'm going to be backed up. Because it could be any one of you. Especially the ones that know me. He said some shit at the beginning about, if you know them, that's why you're here. Shit. In Los Angeles, there's people that know me that don't go because I'm going to be there. Right? Because I'll ask some questions. Our group asks each other questions in the meeting, out of the meeting, and after the meeting for 15 years. Questions are a part of our format. Oh, can't ask questions in an AA meeting. You ever walk into a meeting with one of your best friends, and the moment you walk through the door, the friendship is like, hi, Chris, how are you? Oh, hi, Joe. After the meeting, it's like, those motherfuckers. And in the meeting, you can't talk. You can't say nothing to each other. So in Santa Monica, we ask each other questions. You do the work. You have a spiritual awakening as a result of the steps. Not a result of 1 through 9.5, 9 3/4, 9 3/8. Don't use 12 to keep from doing the work. Don't use going back to 1 to keep from living some periods of time in love, in 10, 11, and 12, dancing and having fun. Get on the other side of your amends. Because if you're alcoholic or addict, they're directly connected with you drinking and using again, even if it doesn't feel that way. Because sober, don't let ease and comfort fool you. A lot of people have gone out behind ease and comfort, and a lot of people have gone out behind pain, and a lot of people have gone on not feeling much at all. Because there's a lot of you in this room tonight with reservations that a human power in the form of a pill is going to treat what you suffer from. Some of you need it. Some of you need a drink. But some of you need to do the work and get free and find out if it was untreated alcoholism or some other disease that needs to be treated. Take the treatment. Take the treatment. Don't debate. Don't come to this thing this weekend if you're coming to tell us about experience you haven't had. We ain't going for opinions. We're going to share experience. This is what it's like. Tell them when you're suffering when you're 15. Tell them when you're suffering when you're 20. Go to somebody when you're 20 with somebody who's hot in your group. The ones that are hot are the ones that aren't telling you they're hot. The ones that are telling you they're hot, don't go to them. Because everybody's going to them. Because they got to go to somebody who's hot. And I'm hot. And I'm going to sit down now. But one story. You can't deceive the deceivers. Yeah. You'll never deceive a deceiver in AA. And here's how it goes. New guy in the neighborhood. Just moved into Staten Island. At Tommy Bradshaw's house. He walks down the street to the neighborhood bar. Just to have a 7-Up. Guy comes wobbling out. Half drunk. Gets in an imaginary car, starts an imaginary engine, and zooms off. Guy thinks it's a little strange, goes in, has a 7-Up. Next night, same thing. He's going in, this drunk's coming out. The newcomer in the neighborhood says to the bartender, who's that guy? who goes out of the bar, gets an imaginary car, starts an imaginary engine, and drives off. He said, oh, he's here every day. He'll drive around in that imaginary car all night, come back when we open, stay all night, and drive off in his imaginary car the next night. He said, why don't you tell him the truth? Why don't you tell him the truth? He said, are you fucking kidding me? He pays me $100 a month to keep his car clean.